And welcome to a recorded edition of Bathrobes Piers Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor, here on 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz. There will be no call-ins today because I'm away on family business, but I will be back on Sunday. That's this coming Sunday, November 26th. So tune in again at 11 o'clock and you'll catch me then. For this show, we have a number of recorded treats for you. There'll be later on a long interview with the Coalition on Homelessness Civil Rights Project person up in San Francisco who's investigating what's going on in Santa Cruz and other cities across the country to get a nationwide perspective on anti-homeless laws and, hey, pro-homeless laws, if any such things can be found. And I and Becky Johnson did a long discussion with Elise on the phone, and you'll be hearing that later in the show. And after that, there will be an interview with attorney James Fassbinder of Los Angeles. James is an activist who has successfully won significant settlements of money from different departments of different cities around police misconduct, and we ran into him at the Democratic National Convention, where Becky Johnson, the producer of this show and a video journalist for local community television Club Cruz, was beaten by police at the Democratic coronation, as I call it. And this attorney is taking the case and talking about recent issues in Los Angeles, where, as you may know, three police officers were convicted of perjury, planting evidence, and other felonies in a real first for Los Angeles, hopefully not a last, because there looks like there are dozens of dirty cops down there, and more important, a dirty system. So that'll be happening later in this two-hour show. Again, there'll be no call-ins, but hey, you can always call 423-4833, which is the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And Huff, the homeless working group, Housing Now in Santa Cruz, Peace and Freedom Party, are all planning to unite in a protest on Tuesday at City Council. That's the Santa Cruz City Council. 6 o'clock, I guess, there'll be a press conference down at City Hall on Tuesday, November 28th. 6:30, there'll be a hot soup meal from India Joe Schultz. And then at 7 o'clock, the new City Council will be, I guess the old City Council will be giving its farewell remarks, and the new City Council will be giving its presentation. And one always can hope that a new City Council, anything has got to be better than this bunch of clowns we're losing. But unfortunately, as of yet, attempts to contact Emily Riley, Ed Porter, Mark Premack, and Scott Kennedy around specific proposals, for example, to end the sleeping ban, or to do something with rent control, or to have something on board around shelter before Christmas, have resulted in silence. In fact, the homeless working group representative Bernard Klitzner made an appointment with incumbent and continuing council member Christopher Crone for yesterday at, I think it was at 9:30. He was supposed to meet with him in his office. Bernard spoke to Christopher the day before at a strange closed city council session that they had on 8:30 Tuesday morning, where we weren't allowed to know what item was on the agenda, and we were only narrowly allowed to speak on the issue of the sleeping ban to the closed council by a vote of 3-4. Anyway, at that meeting, Bernard Klitzner made an appointment with Christopher Crone to meet the next day, which was on Wednesday, right before the agenda is formed. The agenda is usually formed a week before the next city council meeting, and we had to see if the city council members, the old ones, were willing to put something on the agenda around the sleeping ban. And what we were asking for was to strike sections 6.36010A and 6.36010B of the sleeping ban. And Crone dutifully said he would meet with Bernard. Bernard showed up early with activist Becky Johnson. They waited for half an hour and received neither a representative, a message, a phone call, anything. They just sat there in the city council offices waiting. And instead, in through the city council offices, trekked all the staff members, the police chief, the head of Parks and Rec, Seal Cirillo, the redevelopment agency, all these folks who actually control the real agenda of city council, and no city council members. So what we have here is just this typical situation where the same old guard people highly paid officials with their own agenda are proceeding to dictate to the old council and to the new council, since the new council is meeting in the evening of the 28th and the old council is meeting in the afternoon, exactly what goes on. It's a sad situation. It's one we thought we'd begun to change in 1998 with the election of the three new council members who had defeated the Beach South Aurora plan, but now we've seen essentially the turning of those three people, and in this last election, the resurgence of people like Scott Kennedy and Mark Premack, who are, I would have to say, probably even worse than the old guard, but one can always say, well, you haven't seen them, but yes, we have. We have seen Scott Kennedy for 8 years, and Mark Premack is pretty clear in his statements, unless he changes his position on things like the sleeping ban, where he says he blames the activists who have been protesting civil rights abuses for the sleeping bans being there at all. It's a strange argument he uses. I mean, it's clearly a fallacious one, false one, and also it's an ad hominem argument directed against individuals to try to blame the victims or even blame those who are fighting the issue for the problems. Anyway, there's nothing on the agenda for November 28th around the sleeping ban. And normally the agenda simply consists in the evening with the new city council of outgoing statements, incoming statements, and then they all recess to a celebration in the Civic Auditorium. Probably the Civic Auditorium would be a great place to do a sleep-in. It might be a good idea for everybody to just take their sleeping bags over there and lie down. And there is space in there, and since city council can't seem to get together the wherewithal to put something on the agenda, maybe they could just, we could just deal with the situation on a sort of an ad hoc basis and show up there. There's all kinds of possibilities. That'll be happening next Tuesday, November 28th, the press conference at 6 o'clock at City Hall, the hot soup at 6:30, and the City Council's self-congratulatory coronation at 7. A council member Crapout Crone's phone number, in case you want to... Actually, the phone number of the entire City Council is 420-5017, but I think it's appropriate to call the entire City Council and let the Christopher Crone know that... and the entire City Council, that when they make an appointment, it seems appropriate that they should keep it. The entire City Council was present when Crone made this appointment. Interestingly enough, he made it right before the closed session opened. And the whole thing shows disrespect and indifference, not just to one member of the community, whose opinions that Crone may not agree with, but it also shows contempt for the whole issue of a homeless, since we've had five homeless people, and people in the homeless community generally, who've previously been homeless, die. Two of drug overdoses, two of suicide, hanging, if in fact it was a hanging and not something involving further foul play, and then a freezing to death in the beach flats of Billy, Boxer Billy Dennison, a quadriplegic man. And of course nothing is being done, and Christopher Crone himself had a resolution on June 28th last summer where he was supposed to be investigating and unanimously passed a resolution to investigate residences, businesses, and churches for parking spaces for vehicles, and not a peep has come out of the city manager's office on that issue. So that's appropriate to raise the issue, 420-5017 at City Council. Tell them you're expecting to see something on the agenda. Perhaps they can open up the Civic Auditorium for sleeping that night, since they don't seem to have anything other than 160 places, 160 floor spaces in the armory and on the floors of several churches for the winter, for the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people who are outside. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the recorded edition, the Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'd say the Thanksgiving edition, but I don't see much to be thankful for. Here, however, is a little festive seasonal cheer, Stan Freberg and his rendition of the first Thanksgiving.
By now, the white man has arrived in great numbers, not only at Miami, but at Jamestown, at Plymouth, and at Salem, Massachusetts. The Puritans have established a thriving colony, enjoying all the social and cultural refinements of a modern society.
Hiya, Harve. Who are you taking to the witch burning Saturday night?
Prudence Adams. Who are you taking to the Rotary Club luncheon?
I haven't got a date yet, but I hear it's going to be quite a
spread. Well, Mayor Pennypacker, how's it look for re-election?
Great, great, great. Never looked better.
Yeah, what about the Indian vote?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you're not too popular with the Indians. They could lose you the election.
That's possible.
Well, they outnumber us.
Well, that's the trouble. You give them an inch and they take over.
But, Mayor, they were here before we were. We moved in on them.
So we did. Well, there's just something about them. They wear funny shoes. They don't even have buckles on them.
Be that as it may, election is Friday. You better make some gesture this week.
Like what?
Well, how about if you make a concession and pick an Indian as a running mate? You'd be sure to carry the Indian block.
What? Anything happened to me, you'd have a mayor that wasn't a Puritan. He'd probably take orders directly from Chief Powhatan.
Yeah.
Say, I got it. The big luncheon tomorrow, the one under the trees.
What about it?
We'll ask an Indian. That'll impress the rest of them.
We could even announce you're going to put one in your cabinet.
No need to go that far. Just have one to lunch.
It'll be great press.
Mayor Pennypacker comes out for equality. Justice. Votes. What a slogan, take an Indian to lunch this week. Show him we're a regular bunch this week. Show him we're as liberal as can be. Let him know he's almost as good as we. Make a feathered friend feel fed this week. Overlook the fact he's red this week. Let him share our Quaker oats. 'Cause he's useful when he votes. Take an Indian to lunch.
2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we tolerate? Indians, Indians, rock, rock, rock. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Let him sit right down and munch this week.
Let's give in and all do the brotherhood bit. Just make sure we don't make a habit of it. Take an Indian to dine this week. Show him we don't draw the line this week. We know everyone can't be as American as we. After all, we came over on a Mayflower. Take an Indian, not a wooden Indian, but a real life Indian to lunch.
And there's a lot of that charity going around here on the Thanksgiving Christmas season. A lot of that kind of token, gosh, I feel bad that all these homeless people are outside, but we're not going to do anything reasonable to change the situation. And you also see it with care providers. Several activists, Robert and Eleanor, are trying desperately to help a man in a wheelchair, Mark Bourne, who's in danger of losing his leg, get into a shelter, get into emergency shelter, and they're running into all kinds of bureaucratic roadblocks from both Dominican Hospital and from service providers who should know better. And I'm not naming those service providers in this show, but I'm going to be tempted to do so in the next show on Sunday if they don't get off their butts and do something to earn their salaries that pay for their houses that they have been living in. Poverty pimp is the word where you're they're not pimping poverty, but they are living as middle-class people on salary, supposedly to serve homeless people. And I'm always a little cranky about that. Sometimes social service providers do good things in terms of the struggles that we're looking for, which are changes in civil rights for homeless people. Sometimes they do good things just daily, you know, trying to keep the rather pathetic system running that does serve some of the people, but certainly the large majority of them, as far as such things as shelter or even the right to sleep without being criminalized go, are left out. More on that later. As I said, I will hope to be bringing this issue up again at the next show. So rent control is another issue in Santa Cruz which doesn't seem to be getting any attention and needs attention fast. Joe Rodriguez, a columnist for the San Jose Mercury News, has actually been doing a significant number of columns on rent control. I'm going to read you one from September 10th. Bob LaMonica, local activist who is fought corruption and malfeasance in the DA's office when Art Danner was DA, who's been a fighter for ending the sleeping ban, passing the sleeping ban initiative back in 1997-98, and again tried to get rent control on the ballot unsuccessfully because the three current incumbents weren't interested in supporting it, and the political machine of SCAN had no interest in that either, even though I think that would do more than any of these election follies and frenzies and frolics that they've been engaging in to make a meaningful change here in Santa Cruz. He's going to be having a debate on the issue of rent control in San Jose on December 14th at the San Jose Civic Center from 7 to 9. But the exact details haven't quite been hammered out. People who are interested in getting more information about this, give a call to the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-4833, 423-HUFF. Here's the article by Joe Rodriguez from the September 10th, 2000 Mercury News. It's time to expand rent control in San Jose and spread it throughout Silicon Valley. Rent control isn't the only answer, but none of the others can arrive soon enough to help renters in towns that are becoming too expensive for average people. I made that argument in a debate last week in Cupertino. 200 people showed up, a big turnout in these busy times. My landlord and developer opponents threw out their usual response, let's build more affordable housing. They never did say when we would get it, of course, but what amused me was more was how they tried to share the pain. Let's put all of our Silicon Valley creativity together, said Catherine Thibodeau, chief executive director, officer of the Tri-County Apartments Association. We're all in this together. Together? Did she mean renters in Santa Clara County who've seen their landlords jack up rents by 32% since January? I half expected Thibodeau to ask the renters and landlords in the audience to hold hands and sing We Shall Overcome. The only way to judge the merit of her argument is to look at the record of affordable housing construction around here. Sadly, we have only one study that's measured how Bay Area cities are doing on affordable housing, and only 50 of the region's 109 cities even bothered to report, which tells us affordable housing isn't a big priority around here. When you add up all the numbers from the cities that did report, we learn that only about 20% of the new homes they built between 1988 and 1995 were affordable to low-income or moderate-income people. In case you're thinking this was just another bleeding-heart liberal study, the report was done by the Bay Area Council, a nonprofit public policy organization sponsored by business. San Jose's planning department expects the Bay Area's largest city to add 44,000 homes by 2020, but only 6,000 of the 44,000 will be considered affordable. Cupertino, smack in the heart of Silicon Valley, has built only 161 affordable homes since 1993. Statewide, California fell 1 million affordable homes short of the number needed to keep up with population and job growth during the 1990s, according to Housing California, a nonprofit coalition of homeless service agencies and housing advocates. With a record like that, affordable housing isn't a goal, it's an empty promise. But even if a million new apartments popped up overnight, we'd still have a problem. The scarcity of affordable apartments isn't the main cause of rising rents. There are three greater forces: high prices for houses and condos, which keep renters trapped in overpriced apartments, high personal incomes, which means more competition among renters for overpriced apartments, and corporate ownership of rental housing, which puts profits and stockholders first and renters last. Any plan for rent relief must tackle these powerful forces. Basically, we need to create more opportunities for renters to buy homes, and we must build more rental housing that isn't vulnerable to free market greed. Here are some things we can do. Dedicate all tax dollars for housing to affordable units owned by residents, public agencies, or community-based organizations. Not another public dime for luxury housing such as what San Jose's redevelopment agency has been building downtown. One good way to raise the money is to eliminate the tax deduction for second homes. That would pour billions of dollars into housing. And let's eliminate all the tax breaks that encourage speculative investment in housing. That would help stem the corporate takeover of rental housing. Let's crack down on towns that won't build their fair share of affordable housing. If they don't play, we cut off their federal or state funding. You might be thinking, hell, it would take years or decades before our federal, state, and local officials passed those sensible ideas. And you'd be right. Will the last ordinary working family in Silicon Valley please turn out the lights? Let's stop listening to the empty promises and admit that we're hopelessly behind in affordable housing and haven't even started on the other answers to the problem. Rent control can stop the bleeding while we work on the real long-term solutions. As proved in Los Angeles and other cities, moderate rent control protects renters, doesn't hurt landlords, and doesn't discourage new construction. I will discuss in future columns how to start a rent control movement in Silicon Valley. And that's by Joe Rodriguez. It's a public forum. If you want to go to www.mercurycenter.com/columnist/Rodriguez and follow the link to the forum, or you can contact him at jrodriguez@sjmercury.com or 408-920-5767. Again, all these numbers you can get repeated for you if you call the local Huff line, 423-4833.
Needless to say, the luncheon there under the trees was a great success, and a good time was had by Puritans and Indian alike. Everything came off beautifully, with the exception of one minor catastrophe.
What do you mean you cooked the turkey, Charlie?
Well, I cooked the turkey, that's all.
You put our national bird in the oven, is that correct?
Yeah, well,
when all of us had our mouths set for roast eagle with all the trimmings,
yeah,
huh?
Well,
you did a thing like that.
Well, the two birds were lying there side by side.
The turkey was for the centerpiece, Charlie. I mean...
Well, they looked so much alike.
Well, we blew it now. They're all sitting down at the table out there.
Yeah.
Started on their little nut cups already. Just have to switch the birds, that's all.
Yeah, well...
Serve them turkey instead of eagle. But it's kind of scrawny looking, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I thought I'd stuff some old bread in it and make it look a little fatter.
You do that, okay?
Okay.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. The following is a recorded interview made on November 10th, 2000, with activist Elise de la Peña, who is a legal student who is gathering information for a special project being conducted across the country, gathering statistics on how homeless people are treated in various cities. She's chosen Santa Cruz as one of the areas and called myself and activist Becky Johnson, and we gave her this long interview, which we think is useful for folks in the Santa Cruz area, and so hence this tape. The survey is being funded not simply as an academic enterprise by the National Coalition for the Homeless based in Washington, D.C., but hopefully with an eye to mounting protests where people from different cities, homeless activists and homeless people alike, support a general push to change laws such as the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which makes ordinary human conduct a criminal bit of behavior and so puts homeless people who are innocent of any crimes in a position of criminality. Following this interview is an interview with Los Angeles attorney James Fassbinder. He'll be giving us an update on how the police are treating folks down in the Los Angeles area. This will be a recorded tape and is a recorded tape. However, if you have any questions, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. That's 423-4833. Which is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a local civil rights organization. Leave a message and we'll get back to you.
So the National Coalition on Homelessness kind of is taking it over and asking for help from regional sites that are part of NCROP, the National Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project.
And how's that project doing? I know that you guys are putting out a newsletter.
Yeah. I think that this report is the biggest thing that's happening with that right now, but I know that one of the goals is to get contacts with cities that haven't been actively participating in NCROP before and make new plans for what the NCROP wants to do.
And were you hired specifically for this project, or are you just an old-time coalition person? Or?
I worked over the summer as the legal intern at the coalition, and so I just came back kind of volunteer part-time to do this.
The National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, that's what I understand its name is,
yeah.
Is it still writing its annual reports on other subjects? I mean, they usually do one a year. Do you know what they're doing?
I'm not sure. I know that they've been low on funding and had kind of upheaval, but I don't really know what they're still doing or what they're not doing. I'm not really sure on their status.
Uh-huh. Well, what I'd like to do... Oh, your name is Elisa...
De La Piana.
De La Piana, and you're with the Coalition on Homelessness.
Yes.
And you're interviewing us down here in Santa Cruz about prevalence of anti-homeless laws and criminalization of the homeless 2000.
That's right. We are interviewing 72 cities across... people in 72 cities across the nation, and Santa Cruz has been chosen as one of those cities.
What an honor, man.
We know stuff is going on there.
Right. Well, in San Francisco, too, the infamous attacks on Food Not Bombs from a few years ago, we understand, continue if someone at a diminished level. And you guys have what I call it whitewash Willie Brown as your mayor.
Yeah. Good name.
Black skin, whitewash. That's the way I look at it.
Right. Yep. And he didn't actually do too well. He pushed several things in this last election that didn't fare very well. So I don't know how much good his name is doing anymore.
Has his slate of supervisors, he's appointed, what, 6 out of 11 or something or more?
Yes, although some of his candidates don't look like they're doing so well. There's going to be a runoff in several races, but it's not clear that his candidates will win, and several of them look like they are certainly going to lose.
What about the notorious shopping cart begone candidate Amos Brown? How's he doing?
Well, our sincere hope is that he does not get reelected. It looks like that there's a chance that will happen, but like I said, it will depend on the runoff.
So there's runoffs in all 11 districts or so, or whatever?
Except for the ones where the supervisor won by a wide enough margin in the first election. So, but Amos has to have a runoff, and that will happen in December.
You're a San Franciscan as well as a national fighter for homeless rights?
I actually live in the East Bay, but I have been working at the Coalition on Homelessness, and so been...
The reason I ask is I know San Francisco has district elections, and isn't this one of the first times when the district elections, I guess they resumed them after they were eliminated in 1980 because they produced too many liberal candidates, and now they're back again. Do you know much about the impact they've had on this election as far as homeless people go?
I don't. I know that there are other people at the Coalition office who could speak more... from a more informed perspective on that, but I don't know very much about it.
Right. I know that we here in Santa Cruz just defeated district elections, but in a much smaller town, the district elections are being pushed by conservatives, interestingly enough.
Hmm.
So, you had some questions you wanted to ask us.
Yes.
Fire away.
Great. Okay. They're very kind of broad questions, and so if there are things that are particular to Santa Cruz, stick them in, and I would love it if you could explain a little bit about, as we're going through these, a little bit about Santa Cruz specific things and kind of the tenor of the city.
Sure, and also since we're broadcasting this on the radio later, if anybody is out there on the radio and you want to add to these answers or you have some more knowledge of things that are happening, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll pass on this information to Elisa to make her a report even more complete.
Great. Wonderful. Well, let's start with the first question, which is, how has your city's treatment of homeless people changed over the last 2 years?
Well, we've been involved in a struggle here to reform the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, which is the law that makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, between 11 and 8:30 in any vehicle or outside, and on much private property as well as public property. So it's an unusually harsh city law against sleeping or even covering up with blankets, which is the second section of the camping ordinance. We've also been working on publicizing other laws, but that struggle has had its own kind of fallout. The actual law against sleeping had some minor positive effects. We weren't able to even get the city council to effectively consider real changes in the sleeping ban that would decriminalize sleeping in some areas of the some areas of the city in 1999. Instead, they lowered the fine to $54 and made it a permanent infraction, which means that you, almost any other section of the code in Santa Cruz, if you ask for spare change twice after dark, you can get misdemeanor prosecution, $500 and $1,000, or $1,000 and 6 months in jail is a maximum sentence. The first such violation is an infraction, the second was a misdemeanor. If it's done within 6 months. However, the sleeping ban had a section which said if it was done within 48 hours, it would be a misdemeanor. We've never had a misdemeanor prosecution that's been carried to term by the city around the sleeping ban. It's usually used as an excuse to lock up sleeping ban protesters and hold them in jail on bail or just sort of break up their demonstrations. And then when it comes time to actually charge them, the charges are dropped to an infraction, which for all you legal eagles out there is not allowed without the consent of the defendant, except in some very, and even in some cases you can't even do it with the consent of the defendant under two very specific California Penal Code sections. However, that doesn't bother our judges. They have their own way of going. Judge Tom Kelly ruled in 1997 when there were literally hundreds of sleeping ban charges that hit the court after a 7.5 month vigil at City Hall, where people stayed up every night and sometimes slept there, were given multiple tickets, held in jail. The judge said, well, the law is constitutional because you can sleep during the day, and therefore it only regulates time, place, and manner. A completely preposterous decision, of course, but one that keeps the wheels of the administration and of the sleeping ban enforcers, who are both the city police and the parks and rangers, going. Becky has something to say.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey.
Yeah, I have some statistics here from, this is from the Homeless Census 2000, which was conducted along with the U.S. Census this spring, which included a point-in-time count on March 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And it also included a survey that was conducted among 811 homeless people responded to the survey.
Okay.
And so this data has been compiled, and the homeless census was just released this August.
Oh, okay.
So I do have some data from that. The question that relates specifically to your first question, the question is, have you been cited or ticketed for camping, sleeping, or covering up with blankets within the last 12 months?
Right.
And of the 811 people, 99 said that they had, which was a 12.5% response rate.
Wow.
Under have you been arrested in the last 12 months, and this of course would be all crimes, 188 said they had out of 811.
Oh.
So that was 23.7% have been arrested at least once in the last 12 months.
Wow.
So we do have, homeless people are cited a lot. We actually think that the camping citations are down from what they were a few years back because there's been so much attention placed on the sleeping ban and the blanket ban. But we hear reports of lots of move-alongs, maybe as many as 10 move-alongs for every ticket that's issued.
Right, right.
And we also have reports of police and Parks and Rec destroying people's campsites. You know, disposing
their property?
Property, yeah, cutting up their tents or just packing it out and dumping it.
I'm familiar. What happens in San Francisco, too?
There's also, there actually was a technical, as I said, lessening of the law in terms of its, you know, potential fine. The fine was $162 if you added in all the city and court and county add-ons for a citation, and actually that goes up to $280 or $290 or $270 if you add in failure to appear, which frequently happened,
right,
as a bail. But that was lessened in, I guess it was March of 1999, they passed it, became effective in April of 99, $54 fine. It was dropped to a $54 fine. As I mentioned before, it was dropped from a misdemeanor to an infraction, the sleeping and blanket sections only. If you camp, if you have the, if you dare to put up a tent against the rain, that's considered not just sleeping, but camping, and that is still a misdemeanor if you do it twice, but this time it's within 24 hours. So they have to cite you for the tent, and you have to be defiant and say, I'm going to keep this tent up because I got a family and two kids here who can't find housing, but we're going to stay here because it's raining, and then they have to come back and say, okay, and then you're guilty of, you know, a misdemeanor, and we'll put you in jail, so there's your housing.
Right.
Now, that doesn't I have not heard of one case of that, of a misdemeanor citation for that, but that is still the law, instead of simply eliminating it or stating that if there were a a shelter emergency, as there has been for the last 10 years, officially city declared. There have been three shelter emergencies declared concurrent shelter emergencies, 1990, 1995, and 1998, which was baldly admitted by the city that they do not have shelter for all homeless people that are out there. There are, in the summer, 28 spaces on the floor of church every night for some 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people.
Wow.
So that means you get like less than 2% of the people in any night in the emergency shelter program. There are some other programs that are long-term programs that have to do with drug and alcohol and other things, dual diagnosis, where you can be homeless and get in there, but even that adds only another 4 or 5% of the population. So most people are outside every night, and that's major disparity because of the shelter emergency. A third thing that was done with the law was, in the winter only, if the Winter Armory shelter, which houses 100 people, is full, and a cop comes to your campsite, he can still rouse you, he can still illegally search, or he can still search you legally, he can still direct you to move on, he can still confiscate your property, but you can later go to court and get this ticket annulled if there was no room at the Winter Armory shelter, which is about 4 months out of the year. So you get these relatively minor changes that have happened, which make it slightly, it gives the illusion of some liberal progress, and I suppose it is in some way, I guess, like a form of progress. A fourth change was they declared that if you got the written permission of the owner and of the tenant, you could park in someone's driveway for no more than 3 calendar nights per month.
Well,
these are the liberalizations of progressive Santa Cruz.
Elisa?
Yeah.
About the estimated number of homeless people in the city of Santa Cruz, the point in time count on March 21st counted 1,273.
Okay.
That was like counting noses.
Okay.
Those are actual people they found. That did include spotters on the street who were looking at people in vehicles, and if they sighted a vehicle that homeless people were inhabiting, they wouldn't go up and try to count how many people were in the vehicle, but they had a formula for an average that if a vehicle is used so many, that's usually used by so many people. So that was how they factored that in.
Okay.
Then they also have a figure that analyzes the estimated homeless population in a year. And let me find that multiplier. 2.59.
So
is the multiplier.
1273 times 2.59.
Right. And that's the estimated number of people who are homeless in the city of Santa Cruz in the course of a year. And that's using an average of 4 months of homelessness, which was how it worked out with the needs assessment, the survey with the 811 homeless people.
Right.
They asked them how long they'd been homeless. And so that's where it averaged out to 4 months per person, as an average length of 4 months.
Okay.
And there was a fifth provision of the law that was slightly liberalized.
Okay.
It used to be that churches were actually not allowed to even have homeless people sleep in their parking lots with church permission. And similarly, businesses were not allowed. In 1995, as some kind of grand liberalization, again, another one of these token liberal measures,
right,
they agreed to allow churches to have 3 vehicles per church to park on a church parking lot for the night, as a sort of a homeless overflow legal situation. Not many churches took people up on this, I think 5 to 10 at most, but it has served to give a few people places to sleep. In 1999, the same time as they lessened the fine, reduced misdemeanor to infraction for the sleeping ban, and gave you 3 nights per calendar month in a driveway, they also included a provision that said 2 vehicles per business parking lot could do the same thing with the written permission of the business owner. Again, a provision that has not been extensively taken up, and also when they sleeping ban safe zones you may have read about this summer, which were a real liberalization that would have helped hundreds of people, were defeated in a 1 a.m. Kind of coup by outgoing Shadow Mayor Catherine Byers, who was has left office, but her spirit lingers on, unfortunately. There was a sort of a minor direction given by the city council to find business and residential parking lot spaces, private property spaces for homeless people to sleep. They directed head of the Homeless Service Center, Ken Cole, to do that. But when we called Cole a week ago, he said he had never been told he was to do that. This passed in June of 2000. So it is now November, and this shows you that the city works very slowly.
Ken Cole is the head of the Homeless
Services Center. It's ironic. We have a man downtown called Robert Steffen who lives in a bag, a large plastic bag. If you ever come to Santa Cruz, go to the bookshop Santa Cruz, but don't buy any books there because they have anti-homeless policies in terms of supporting sit on the sidewalk, go to jail laws. But outside of that bookshop is Robert Steffen in a bag. He was three times arrested by the Homeless Services Center for trespass for sitting on the porch saying, I have to sleep somewhere, I'm going to sleep here since you won't let me in your program. And he was held at a month in jail each time. The third time it took the charges to term. And he's on probation for trespass at the Homeless Services Center. This is a homeless man.
Wow.
So there are some pretty ironic and twisted stories here around that.